What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Jesse Strauss. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is in Washington, D.C. this week having diplomatic meetings starting today with an address to Congress, a meeting scheduled with President Joe Biden tomorrow, and then with former President Donald Trump this Friday in Mar-a-Lago. He's also expected to meet with Vice President Kamala Harris during his trip. Thousands are protesting Netanyahu's D.C. appearances, and we'll hear from Bay Area activists who've traveled there to join the protests in about 10 minutes. But first, we're joined by Maria LaHood, the Deputy Legal Director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, who's worked on legal projects related to justice in Palestine for decades. The Center for Constitutional Rights has urged the U.S. Department of Justice to open a federal criminal investigation into the Israeli Prime Minister during his visit to the U.S. for his responsibility for genocide, war crimes, and torture. Maria LaHood, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you back. To many of us who've consumed news of Israel's actions in Gaza since October, we've seen that the Zionist country is being led into and through a genocide by Netanyahu. What's the legal basis for CCR's complaint to the Department of Justice?
Well, you know, under Netanyahu's direction, command, and control, Israel has killed 40,000 Palestinians in Gaza, including more than 14,000 children. It's injured 90,000, like Ahmed, who your former guest was talking about. They've forcibly displaced 2 million people and are intentionally starving the entire population as we speak. We have a federal court who said that Israel's plausibly committing genocide and implored the Biden administration to stop its unflagging support. We have the International Court of Justice that ordered Israel to stop committing acts of genocide. We have the International Criminal Court prosecutor who applied for arrest warrants for Netanyahu and Gallant for war crimes and crimes against humanity. Netanyahu is committing genocide and war crimes every single day. And the White House and Congress are treating him like a hero rather than a war criminal. It's shameful and makes every one of them even more complicit in his crimes. So the mandate of the Department of Justice, Human Rights and Special Prosecutions Office is to hold people criminally accountable for genocide, war crimes, and torture. Those are federal crimes in this country, and HRSP has jurisdiction over perpetrators in the United States or when there are U.S. victims. And here, a criminal investigation and prosecution is urgently needed to protect Palestinians from an ongoing genocide and war crime, and to break the cycle of impunity that Israel officials enjoy, and to ensure that the rule of law and justice mean anything. And it's not just Netanyahu who is here this week, but also Gallant and Gantz and Ben-Gavir, who all come to the United States. And there are more than 20,000 US citizens currently serving in the IDF. And there's also a host of complicit US officials at the highest levels of our government that should be investigated for complicity in Israel's crimes. Even if DOJ doesn't do anything this week, genocide has no statute of limitations, and most war crimes don't either. So, you know, it might not be this week, it might not be this year, but they've acted before and they can act again.
And in the complaint that you all filed from the Center for Constitutional Rights, just to be clear, you're saying that you've named Benjamin Netanyahu, you've named these other Israeli officials, but also named there, is it correct that you're saying are the up to 20,000 U.S. citizens who are working with the Israeli military?
Well, we have not named them because we don't know, you know, most of their names. But yes, we have highlighted to DOJ that those are people who should also be investigated. And, you know, we've submitted an initial submission, a 23-page letter because of Netanyahu's visit, but we can continue to submit information as we learn of it regarding other people who should be investigated and prosecuted and, you know, for what specific crimes as well. And DOJ has the mandate to act. And it has to do so. You know, it's They brought war crimes charges against Russian soldiers for war crimes in Ukraine. They've gotten torture convictions. They even opened a criminal investigation for war crimes into Shireen Abu Akleh's killing, although it's been 2 years, more than 2 years, since Israel killed her. And if people remember, she's a prominent Palestinian American journalist for Al Jazeera. And now right. Israel's killed more than 100 journalists.
That's right. The complaint that you all filed named three different statutes: the genocide statute, the War Crimes Act, and the torture statute. I believe is how they're referred. I'm wondering mm-hmm. if you can talk briefly about each of those and how there is a credible basis for supporting charges against Netanyahu and these other Israeli officials yes. and soldiers who are complicit in committing genocide.
So, and just to be clear, this isn't a complaint in court. This is a request to the Department of Justice to launch a criminal investigation. And there are three criminal statutes we refer to: the genocide statute, the war crime statute, and the torture statute. We have already submitted a plethora of evidence that Netanyahu is committing genocide in a civil case we brought against Biden, Blinken, and Austin for aiding and abetting genocide and failing to prevent it on behalf of two Palestinian organizations, Al-Haq and Defense for Children International Palestine, on behalf of three Palestinians in Gaza, and on behalf of five Palestinian Americans in the United States. And there we lay out the case against, and the standards are the same under customary international law under which we brought the case, the civil case, and under the genocide statute. We show that, you know, that Israel has stated its intent to commit genocide, its intent to, you know, remove an entire people, its intent to starve, to deny food and water and fuel and electricity to an entire people. And then we've laid out the genocidal acts that they've committed. That case, unfortunately, was dismissed against the U.S. officials. You know, the court found that there were political questions implicated, finding basically it's the U.S. executive's role to manage foreign affairs. So the president can basically aid and abet genocide or even commit genocide. And the court said it has absolutely no ability to review that conduct if it implicates foreign policy. So completely abdicating its constitutional role to say what the law is and to check executive power, which really makes it even more critical that the DOJ launch a criminal investigation, because there's not civil accountability here. And it has the genocide statute to do that. It also has the war crime statute. You know, basically, we have laid out in the letter how every single day Netanyahu commands, you know, the government and the army that is willfully killing and starving Palestinians, forcibly transferring them from their homes and their land, mm-hmm. extensively destroying their homes, their hospitals, their schools, their mosques, their churches, whole neighborhoods without military necessity. And those are all war crimes. We couldn't, the war crimes are so extensive, we could only put a sampling in the letter, but they're happening, you know, all the time.
So, Maria, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I wanted to ask, earlier you rattled off a handful, quite an impressive handful of lawsuits that have essentially said Israel is committing war crimes or genocide or other types of horrific violence at this time against Palestinians in Gaza. Many of those charges, though, rulings are non-binding. I'm wondering mm-hmm. from a legal perspective, if what you imagine the best case to come out of these, will somehow these non-binding rulings have a material impact on Israel's ability to continue its reign of violence?
Okay, well, international law is part of our law. It's not separate, it's not aspirational, but any law is as powerful as we make it. It needs to be enforced. And if our courts won't do it and the political branches won't do it, then it's up to us. It's up to us and boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and to put all the pressure we can muster. And we have students demanding divestment, unions are fighting, people are demanding the U.S. stop sending arms, thousands of people are in D.C. protesting Netanyahu and demanding his arrest, we need to help enforce international law.
All right. Maria, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
All right. That's the voice of Maria LaHood, the deputy legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, which has called for a U.S. Department of Justice investigation into Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his responsibility for genocide, war crimes, and torture. We're going to stay on the topic of Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to D.C. and bring on a Bay Area activist who's traveled to the Capitol in order to protest the Israeli Prime Minister's visit. Our guest is Reem Asil, an activist and chef and owner of the Bay Area restaurant, Reem's California. Reem is a longtime member of the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, or AROC. Reem, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Grateful to be in conversation with you always. We have been hearing about Netanyahu's trip to D.C. I'm wondering if you can talk about the type of mobilizations that have happened already and what we're going to be expecting today and over the next few days in the capital city.
Yeah, I'm just coming off of a blocking of many intersections as activists all across the city are blocking Netanyahu from getting to the capital, making it virtually impossible for him to do his address. Meanwhile, thousands and thousands of people are gathering around the Capitol on 3rd and Pennsylvania. And, you know, we're almost 300 days into this genocide, and you would think that people are exhausted and hopeless, but it's quite the opposite. The energy is really high. You know, a lot of righteous rage and actually a sense of hopefulness that we can continue to disrupt business as usual. So it's been really amazing to be out here side by side with comrades, you know, really putting it all on the line. It's really showing what people are willing to do to stop this genocide from happening.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how these protests are organizing, are being organized. I know that there's some very large protests, and then there's some, my understanding is people taking their own initiative. I saw online from the Palestinian Youth Movement's postings overnight that even the hotel that Netanyahu is supposedly staying at received some attacks.
Yes. So the call out is, you know, by the main organizers, the Palestinian Youth Movement, in coordination with other folks who've been, you know, strong in this movement. We were part of the Grassroots Global Justice Coalition, which is also part of the Rising Majority. There are Veterans Against the War, just to name a few. And people are organized and in coordination with one another. And this was really a call out from the Palestinian Youth Movement to disrupt everywhere and anywhere. You know, I think so far we have sent a very clear message to our elected officials that they should not be normalizing business with a certified, recognized war criminal. That is just unconscionable that we've, you know, 300 days into this failed to stop the Biden administration's arms sales to Israel.
And Reem, I want to read the caption from the DMV Palestinian Youth Movement's post from last night about how they targeted the Watergate Hotel, which is supposedly where the Israeli Prime Minister is staying. Here's what they wrote. I'm reading this. Palestine protesters manufactured chaos at the Watergate Hotel last night so that Netanyahu, Israeli Mossad agents, and the Secret Service had no peace as they continued to terrorize our people. Mealworms and maggots, and we're not talking about Netanyahu, were left on their banquet tables, and crickets were released on multiple floors of the hotel. Fire alarms were triggered for over 30 minutes on multiple floors to ensure that there will be no rest before Netanyahu and Congress disgrace themselves in front of the world for failing to achieve any of their military and political objectives. May their dreams be haunted by the death of our people and decay of their society. The protests are using quite strong language. It is a strong moment in history. What do you hope to get from these protests? What do you hope that the impact of them will be?
I think people, we are in an unprecedented moment where we have created a crisis for the ruling class. You know, we are seeing both of these parties really scrambling to hold on to their power so much that it has turned into outright repression of our communities. And I think that's part and parcel to the organizing that we've done over the last, 9 months or so. But even before that, and people are getting more and more radicalized. So I really hope that this these protests galvanize folks, get them recommitted to what it's going to take to end this genocide, because we know that once the U.S. stops arming Israel, this genocide will end, that this apartheid state cannot survive without the full funding and complicity of the U.S. administration. So I'm hoping that this will galvanize people to know that we created that. You know, there's no turning back, and we need to further push this crisis. Organize further. It goes beyond just voting, but it's organizing in our communities, really normalizing boycott, divestment, sanctions, which has, become part of the mainstream discourse. We've really shifted that discourse. I mean, students across the country did that last spring by putting divestment front and center. We need to continue that. I mean, just this week, seven unions, called for an end of arming to Israel. It was unfathomable to think that that was going to be part of the discourse almost a year ago. So the tides are shifting, and we need to keep pushing. So we hope that the kind of energy and the spirit of confrontation of power will really send a message to the current administration that if they want the support of the people, they need to stop crossing every red line that we've drawn, right? And if not, we will be that red line until they do.
Well, Reem, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you for joining us today, and thank you for representing the Bay Area strongly in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Law & Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a world where all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law & Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is co-hosted by me, Jesse Strauss, and Kat Brooks, and produced by me as well. Our show theme music is from Steve Raskin. Feel free to hit us up about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media, that's at lawanddis, D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you stream podcasts by searching for Law & Disorder with Kat Brooks. You can also find our content live on KPFA Radio or streaming at kpfa.org in the 8 a.m. Pacific hour, Mondays through Thursdays. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by listeners, and if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.